Good evening and welcome to the Gnostic Waves radio show, where we talk about all things mystical, philosophical and psychological with a bit of meditation. You're here with your host, Diana Azam, and tonight I am joined via Skype communications by a special guest, Cameron Blanche from Lismore, New South Wales. Hello, Cameron.
Hello, Diana. Thank you very much again for having me.
And thank you for your time. It's always interesting to hear what you're going to talk about. Today, you're going to share some light on inner silence.
Yes, inner silence is something that one reads about in any mystical or esoteric tradition, and in Gnosticism, it's something that we also place a very large importance on. I just wanted to say before I start that it's a real joy to be able to have this opportunity to talk and to use the words to speak about esotericism is probably the best use of the word I can think of. So thank you for that.
No, thank you. And we leave the audience in your capable hands, so to speak.
Thank you. So something interesting comes about when one begins to delve into studies of an esoteric nature, and that is that they uncover many paradoxes in the light of the truth. And a really interesting paradox that we find is the emphasis placed on an inner silence of the aspirant to achieve and to maintain a level of inner quietude. But at the same time, there is also a very large emphasis on the use of sound in an esoteric way. And I've heard many comments come from people before that, how is it that I'm supposed to always yearn for and achieve an inner silence, but at the same time we use sounds and mantras and things all of the time? It seems contradictory. So I thought that we would talk about that topic tonight. And talk about sound in a psychological context and also in an esoteric context. So this idea of inner silence, or this teaching of inner silence, is so fundamentally important, but I also find that it's one of the biggest factors, or one of the biggest hurdles people meet when they're beginning their career as someone who would engage in meditation practice. It's quite common when you speak to people about meditation and they remark to you, oh, well, I would very much love to do that. I would feel that it's such an important thing to go into, but I know that I just wouldn't be able to do it. But the fact of the matter is that anybody can do it. Anybody can close their eyes and sit there for a moment. It's obvious in the face of those remarks that we know the big obstacle to going inside oneself lies inside oneself. That's the whole nature of esotericism, is that we are seekers of the truth. We yearn to discover the truth, to comprehend the mysteries of the universe. And the nature of Gnosticism is that it's about self-knowledge, and the depository of that knowledge and that wisdom lies inside of ourselves. So we see that the barriers obviously lie inside of us. But I think I'll begin more importantly about speaking about the esoteric notions of sound and how we see sound being so prevalent in many of the different mystical traditions. Nowhere do we see it, more importantly, could we say, than in the realm of cosmogenesis, which is basically the teachings about the creation of a cosmos, which is fairly massive. So I've got four separate quotes here that I'm going to read, and I think you'll find something very interesting. The common thread when we read about the creation of a universe from an esoteric point of view is the use of sound, which is something very interesting. So the most obvious one that we see from the Bible is, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. From the Popol Vuh, which is the Mayan text, the Mayan liturgy, they say, this is the beginning of the ancient word, the potential and source for everything done. An ancient Hindu scripture speaks about this, about the beginning. It says, In a year, he desired to speak. He uttered Bhūrbhuvāsva, Bhūr, which means earth, Bhuvā, which became figment, and Sva, which became the sky. With his mouth, he created the gods. And finally, from the Egyptian text, we have, I, Osiris, brought my own name into my mouth as a word of power. And I forthwith came into being under the form of things which are and under the form of Kepera, which is from the Book of Knowing. So it's very interesting. We see such a massive emphasis on the word in an esoteric point of view. The sound within esotericism is something holy, it's something sacred. It's something that we place extreme importance on and we use quite extensively through many of the different practices that we have. So from a psychological point of view, we can look at sound and in the context of the mind and working with the mind. It's very interesting to think about one's internal universe. If we take for a moment the knowledge that we've been speaking of over the weeks and over the months and even over the years, we can bring forward that teaching of the internal and the external reality. And we've spoken time and time again, and many of the people on this show have spoken so beautifully about the mysteries of the internal state and the external environment. And we see that really our reality actually takes place in our own constitution, within our own psychology. This is how we experience everything. The means with which we experience life is through the senses, as we understand it from a physical and materialistic point of view. So this is how we engage with the world. But sound is a very interesting way that we engage with the world. Sound is really a bridge between the external world and the internal environment. Through sound, we have the power to actually affect someone's psychology. From a psychological point of view, this is very interesting, very important. With a slight comprehension of this truth, we can then take a greater responsibility with the use of our own word in how we affect someone else's internal environment. And this is just in a normal, everyday, common occurrence. The sound, the word, is how we relate with our fellow human beings. So we have a responsibility with the words that we use in how we can affect someone else's reality. It's very important. But not only that, there is a much deeper mystery that underlies that. From an esoteric point of view, we see that sound is a way for us to cause changes in the internal worlds, in the higher dimensions. This is why we see the use of mantras, sacred words, sacred liturgy being used in all of the traditions. From the Aboriginal traditions to the Western Masonic traditions, sound is always of principal importance to any esoteric practice, because it is by using the word in an upright way and with the wisdom that comes from esotericism, we can create changes not only in the esoteric environment, but also in our own internal environment. So this is power. The wisdom of the word, the wisdom of sound passed down through esoteric lineages has always had a great importance, because with that comes responsibility, with that comes power. And there are many different sciences that deal with mantras and deal with mystical and holy words. But that's obviously a massive topic that we'll have to talk about another time. So then we see this very large, important and sacred teaching about sound and the word. So how does it marry up with an inner silence? Why is it that we have to reach an inner silence? Because, as we said before, there is a large misconception that comes along with achieving an internal silence. From one level, people see inner silence as the goal, that their goal is just to achieve an inner silence. But what is it that's actually becoming silent? That's a good question. With very little experience in meditation, we see that difficulty. We see that we shut off the senses, we close the eyes, we relax for a small moment, and immediately we discover that attaining peace is not as easy as what we initially thought. We realize the barrier is thought. The movement of our thoughts as they unfold upon one another is what we will call thinking. So the movement of thought, the thinking process, is a barrier to our own quietude. You know, many of the things that we do in our physical world, the way in which we behave, oftentimes mirrors many of the things that we do internally in our own internal environment. You see people in the world naturally want to search for a type of peace, a type of serenity, a type of solitude, silence. People live in the city and from time to time they say, I need to get out, I need to get to the peace and quiet of the country. They search for a physical type of silence because the chaotic noises which are surrounding them make it very difficult for them to have a positive well-being. So they search for that type of silence, that solitude, externally to themselves. But the Sufis, the very wise Sufis, say something interesting. They say, one has to find silence in the noise. One has to find solitude in a crowd. Because we can continually run from that external type of noise, but it's when we end up moving into that external silence that we then have to confront the internal noise. And this is really what meditation is. We don't have to go out to the country and move our whole entire life around just to get that type of serenity. Sure, there's benefits to that, but all one has to do is just close the eyes. And they'll see that wherever they go, the noise is always going to follow them. You can be in the quietest remote part of the world, but you'll begin to find that the noise we have in our own mind can actually be quite deafening. And this is easy to see. The confrontation with the internal chaotic noise can be quite difficult to deal with. We see many of the behaviors that we exhibit in our day-to-day life shows us that truth. That we all the time fill our lives up with things that distract us from going inwards. And it's becoming more apparent as time goes on. Now, we pretty much always have a piece of technology on us, whether it be a smartphone or an iPad or a Kindle or laptops, desktops. Everywhere you go, you can access a type of technology, which on one hand is useful, and which, on the other hand, helps us to distract ourselves from ourselves even more. And we saw this interesting ad on a billboard one time that said, don't be bored ever again. And I thought, what was that? And then I saw the TV ad for that, and they were basically promoting that any moment in your life in which you are waiting, you don't have to spend it in silence anymore. You don't have to spend it there doing nothing, in inverted commas. It was like an ad for some type of technology, some piece of technology, that at any moment you can always fill yourselves or occupy yourself with the type of activity. Because we want to wrap ourselves up in an experience with the senses, because inherently it's too painful for us to turn inwards and deal with the contents of the mind. So the path of the Gnostic begins when they begin to turn inwards and realize that that is the journey. The initiatic path, or the path of the hero, or the Herculean path, or the Christic path, whatever name you want to give it, is a path that we take inwards. We begin at ourselves, moving in, and we end at ourselves.
Yes, unfortunately, as you say, we've become sensorial junkies. Okay, so we will go to a short music break, and then we'll be back to hear more on the topic of inner silence with Cameron Blanch. And we are back on the Gnostic Waves radio show with Cameron Blanch, speaking on the Gnostic inner path in relationship to inner silence. So, Cameron.
Thank you. As we were saying before, there's many misconceptions about this teaching of inner silence and the purpose of reaching inner silence, because we said that for many people that is the goal, And obviously from one level, it's a very good goal to achieve. But what is the purpose for that? Well, one purpose initially from one level is just to have some type of internal peace. As we said, people are yearning for a type of silence. Why do we yearn for silence? Why do we want silence? And the barrier to the silence. So we said before, the barrier to the silence, as we discover quite quickly, quite early on, is the activity of the mind and the thinking process. We begin to work with the esoteric tools of breathing, of mantra, of visualization. And we see that with effort, it's actually quite difficult. It doesn't take too long to achieve some results, but some type of consistent activity is definitely needed. And then the mind is not quietening when we want it to. So we know that there's a lot more effort that's actually needed. So when we say that we are trying to achieve an internal silence, an inner silence, this is implying a type of control and a type of order of our own psychology. And this is something that's very important to the Gnostic, to have control over their own internal world. Very difficult. And the methodology of meditation, the science of meditation, is there to teach the person how they can actually have control over their internal environment, how they can begin to control their psychology. Because in our current state, we have a chaotic mind. Our mind is noisy. As the Zen call it, the monkey mind. I like this term, the monkey mind, because it implies a mind that lacks focus, a mind that lacks a one-pointedness, like a monkey jumping from tree to tree, always moving very quickly. Our mind does the same thing. So an internal silence initially is there so we can develop a type of order in the mind. We need order for many, many things in our existence. We need an ordered mind so we can think clearly. We need an ordered mind so we can have some type of control over our emotional state and the link between our emotions and the way that we behave. But not only that, we need control over our mind so we can begin to control the way that we actually act and behave in our day-to-day life. Because if we take it one step further, our psychology and the things that are actually moving our psychology in different ways are the things that are guiding our behavior. And when we sit and we do a very simple meditation practice, we see that inside of our mind there is no unity. There's actually great conflict, which is why there is chaos. There seems to be a civil war happening inside of our own mind from many different parties. And we can't reconcile those things that are happening in there. So our behavior and our emotions and our thoughts are coming from many, many different avenues, and all of those avenues quite often don't agree. How can we be a unified being if this is the case? We're in some ways a walking hypocrisy, because we may think one way and act another way, feel one way, think another way, feel one way, act a separate way. To be a unified individual is to have the mind, the emotions, and our actions in order. But what is the underlying mechanics of this? There is much, much wisdom that has been written about the mind. Because in order to deal with the mind, one has to know how it works. Because we could say in some senses our mind needs fixing. I mean, we need to change the way that we think. And that's a very deep topic to think about. But if you have a car, that's broken down, or a car that's not working the way that you want it to work and you want to fix it, you have to know something about cars. I mean, I don't know anything about cars. If my car breaks down, I've got to call someone or take it to a mechanic because I have no idea. So if one is to actually start fixing their own mind, to heal their mind, to change the way that they think, they need to know about the mechanics of the mind, how the mind actually operates, because it's a vehicle. We've spoken of it many times before. People have spoken about solar biology, occult anatomy, the many vehicles that we have as a human being, and the mind is one of these vehicles. Time and time again, we differentiate between the mind and the consciousness, and that they are not the same thing, that the mind is a vehicle that the consciousness can use. But underlying most of the mechanics of the mind is the beautiful wisdom of duality. That although we can sit in meditation for 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, for hours, and we can watch the thoughts move across the mind, we can see the stream of thoughts happen. It may seem like we have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of thoughts. And from one point of view, we do. But those thoughts really only manifest from two different sides. Because all of the thoughts that we have are based in relativity. We see someone walking down the street and we say, that person is very tall. That is a thought. But we can only have that thought and label that person tall because we are relating it with something that is smaller than that person. We eat a meal and we say, that was delicious. We can only say that thought and label that experience with that in relation to something that's not as delicious as that. And it's an interesting exercise to spend a day or 2 days or 3 days and watch the activities of the mind and watch the commentary that plays in the background as we live and see how we do this. Try to think outside of those parameters. It's impossible. Our experience is based on our relativity. The problem is that we don't comprehend this deep enough. And we cling to each point of view as a truth, not understanding that it's only half of something. To live an experience and to say, oh, that was a horrible time. And we put so much value on that. This is the worst. This is the worst. This is the worst. We're only having that experience and labeling it like that in relation to another experience that we've had, which is better. And so what do we do in our life? We grasp, we cling to those experiences that we want, and we forcibly avoid those experiences that we don't want. And this is how we live in a psychological state of suffering. But with the wisdom of duality and what we would call the battle of the opposites that happen in the mind, we're going to be dealt many, many things, and nothing lasts forever. The only permanent thing in the universe, as the Buddha said, is impermanence. Every experience that we have, which we will call negative, is going to have an end. Every positive experience that we have is going to have an end. So we go into a social situation or we go on a holiday projecting a positive experience onto that. And when it doesn't meet the expectations we have in the mind, this is when we begin our suffering. To see those mechanics of the mind happening all the time, automatically. We're a slave to the mind, hitting back and forth all of these experiences, even to very minute things. To step outside of that working and to understand that life is filled with all its duality is to begin to have control over over the way that we actually experience the world. So inner silence is, the first stage of that is to take a step outside of those thinking processes and to understand that this is how the mind continually operates. We don't have to be underneath those mechanisms. It's like a pendulum swinging from one side to the other, and we can almost view it as as it's happening throughout our life, it's like the watch of the hypnotist that we see, that stereotypical image of the hypnotist, and it keeps swinging and swinging and swinging. And we keep watching those things move inside of our mind, and then boom, we fall psychologically asleep. So the way that we behave in our life stems from quite often the way that we're actually thinking. And a huge part of our behavior and the way that we interact with our life and our actions is the way that we use the word. Where do your words spring from? What's the source of your actions? What's the source of your expression? In esotericism, in Gnosticism, and we reach an inner silence for a very particular purpose. It is not the end goal. We search for an inner silence so a creation can take place. For instance, look at a flute. When you play into a flute, inside of that flute, it is filled with space. It is filled with nothing. If you blocked a flute up with everything and totally filled it, it could not make any sound. It could not make any music. That flute has to have a space for a creation to take place. And out of that flute, hopefully we get beautiful music, depending on our ability. And our mind, in many instances, is the same. We need an internal silence for a creation to take place. This creation that happens inside of ourselves comes from the consciousness. The inner silence is a part of a non-doing or a non-action. In Taoism, the wu wei, which is the not doing. It can't be the final goal. How can it be? How can non-doing be the final goal when life is about acting? We get to the point of not doing with the mind so that our words and our actions and our emotions can spring from the consciousness itself. And in this way, we become a unified individual. How often do we use our words and say something and later on say, well, I didn't mean that. What I meant was this. Oh, no, I use my words. I meant to say this, but I said that instead. When we begin to have control of our mind, we begin to have control of our word. See, when we observe the mind continuously, we'll see that our thoughts happen in two separate ways. Our thoughts portray themselves sometimes as images, like projections in our imagination. We actually see things sometimes. But also we can have thoughts in a type of internal speech, like a monologue that's going on in our own mind. What they call in the East, you know, the mental chatter. Like our mind is actually talking. And if you observe your mental chatter closely, you'll perceive that the way your mind speaks reflects the way that you use your word. And it can also be said that the way that we use our word reflects the way that we have, that our mind actually thinks. So we have this beautiful cyclical process. You change the way you speak, you change the way you think. You change the way you think, you change the way that you speak. So our words can actually spring forth from a pure source rather than an inner contradiction, because we create many errors by doing that. So I find that it's not really an esoteric paradox to speak about that, because they're so complementary. Sound can only be born from a silence. So we achieve an inner silence so that we can begin to move into the esoteric aspects of what sound is, which we don't have time to talk of now, but they're so vast and so important. As Blavatsky said, she called it the voice of the silence. The voice of the silence is the ontological aspect of sound, the divine aspect of sound that lives inside of us. To have an experience with this internal sound is to have an experience with divinity.
Thank you, Cameron. That was some really profound points there. I was just wondering about, well, not wondering, it was a reflection on the way we communicate, and we think we're being understood, but then we ask someone to repeat their understanding of what we've said, and it's often different, which, I mean, it's indicative of not possibly communicating very well, but also the person misinterpreting, so...
Absolutely, like the way that we speak can be confusing to us, and then the way that we hear can be confusing. So you've got sounds projecting that are confusing, and then someone receiving those sounds making it even more confusing. We get tangled up. I mean, politicians understand it in a really big way, and people in power, because they know the power of the things that they say, and quite often they'll speak for a long time, and they seem to speak eloquently. But at the end, if you are critical about what they've said, you realize they haven't really said anything.
Mm. Yes. Keep them out of trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we'll go to another short music break, and then we'll be back for the meditation part of the segment. So we'll be back in a few minutes on the Gnostic Waves radio show. We're speaking to Cameron Blanch, and he's just about to lead us into the meditation segment. So guiding us through a meditation.
Thank you, Diana. So we'll do a very, very simple meditation practice. It won't be anything too strenuous. So the most important thing, obviously, is that we are in a comfortable position. We don't have to be fanatical about that. We can... If we're on our couch, we can lie down, or on our bed, we can lie down, or sitting in a chair, try to keep the back straight. But the most important thing is that we're comfortable, because we want to leave the body. I mean, we want to leave the senses and the sensation of the physical body behind us, because the degree at which we can relax the physical body is the degree at which we can penetrate our inner nature. So sit very comfortably. So you're comfortable enough that you aren't required to move. And for a moment, just concentrate on your physical body. Where it is sitting. With your imagination, try to see your body in the room or outside. See the things around you. Feel the clothes on your body, the sensation of the clothes on your skin. See the color of the clothes on your skin. And resign yourself to relax. You don't need a physical body right now. It can be in a state of not doing. It's time for the physical body to be passive. Feel your chest rise and fall as you breathe. The sensation of the air as it moves in and out of your nostrils. We're going to take a moment, and I want you to project your awareness out of your ears. To the auditory environment, the sounds that are happening around you, and move your awareness to each sound. perhaps the wind moving through the trees, the birds singing. And animals in the background. A few cars driving along the street. Perhaps there are children playing or people talking. Don't resist any sounds. Don't judge any sounds. It is just life. Sound is an expression of life. And what may occur now is that you may begin to hear the sounds of the body, whether it's a rushing in the ears or your breath. Now with your awareness, with your concentration on your nose, begin to breathe deeply. As we breathe in, slowly, our abdomen moves out. And as we exhale, it moves in. If the mind interjects with a thought, don't react violently. Just bring yourself back to the point of concentration, which is the nose. Breath is the carrier of our speech. If we could not breathe, we could not speak. Now let the breath flow naturally. without altering it. Understand that the breath is a reflection of duality. When this dualistic process stops, we die. To finish the practice, we're going to do a very interesting activity that comes from the East. Practice used by the yogis. To help us comprehend at one level the nature of duality. Concentrate on your right arm. Now your left arm. And both arms together. Concentrate on your right leg. Your left leg, both legs together. Concentrate on the whole right side of the body. And now the left side of the body. The front of the body. The back of the body. The whole body together. Now use your imagination to feel the heaviness of the physical body, like a stone, immovable by the elements, sinking down on the spot in which you are on. Feel the force of gravity pull it down. And now, feel the physical body to be supremely light. Like a body of feathers, a cotton body. Like a 45 degree day. The super humidity. Now imagine the body to be cold. Like an ice wind blowing across the skin. A chill. Again, project your awareness out through your ears, hear the sounds in your environment. See with your imagination your body in the room or wherever it is you are. The color of the clothes on your body. Feel your body move with your breath. And when you are ready, you can gently open your eyes.
Well, thanks for that practice, Cameron. Feeling really relaxed. I hope all our listeners are as well. And thank you again for coming onto the show.
It's always a pleasure, so thank you for inviting me.
Okay, and if you want any more information on this program, then head to the website, gnosticwaves.com. You can listen to past show recordings or this particular show recording when it's put up. So thank you for your company, and we look forward to next week, same time, same place, and hope you have a good week. Good evening.